He's the current assistant wrestling coach at Iowa State University, and he is a former Iowa Hawkeye, one of the most legendary wrestlers in their program's history, and he's none other than Brent Metcalf. Brent, hey, thank you so much for coming on to the show, man. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Right on. So everyone knows you as a ferocious competitor, and you were certainly on the mat. You were a force to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. Are you as ferocious, though, as a coach?
I think as a coach, there's a time and a place. It's kind of how I've kind of developed a bunch, even as a coach over time here. But I think that, you know, what worked for me, which having that kind of very disciplined, I guess the way I looked at it was there wasn't a whole lot of gray area, right? Like you always did everything the hardest you can, all the time, no matter what. I would say perfection. No one is perfection, but that was, you know, I woke up every day trying to perfect my day, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I've kind of found that recipe isn't perfect for everybody, right? There are guys, and there's a number of guys that can really fit into that mold and it can work well for them. But there's a lot of guys too who need to have a little more wiggle room. And that's not to say that they don't have the same standard or that they don't want to win at the same level. It's that there's just different ways of getting there. And sometimes if you hold guys to the fire so hard, like, hey, you got to be perfect, it's hard on them. It's hard. And some kids have the ability to do that and some don't. And I know we're kind of going into a deep area you could go here. But that's not, yeah. So as a coach, am I fiery? Yeah, sure. I think especially during practice, you know, if I'm running practice, there's times where I certainly get fired up and excited. You know, but I don't know if, you know, if you ask my athletes, they would probably, most of them would probably lean towards, hey coach, I thought you were an asshole when I used to watch you wrestle, but you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not that I was an asshole. It's just, you know, different ways that you work with different types of people.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
And you said we were kind of getting into a deep area potentially, and let's keep going because I've listened to plenty of podcasts with you. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of yours. I've listened to you whenever I've gotten the chance, especially in my younger years when you were coming up through Iowa.
Yeah.
I was all ears, all eyeballs. Mm-hmm. What makes this guy tick? I've watched the Flow documentary as well, and it's strange meeting you in a way. And I knew this to be the case, but it's just different meeting you. You watch you as a wrestler. It's like, this guy is a jerk. He is a jerk. You watch you in the post-match interviews. What's wrong with this guy? He's talking like this. He's talking like this. And then he's running off the mat. When I meet you, you're not just friendly. You're incredibly friendly. Yeah. You're incredibly hospitable. You're a gentle guy. You're nice to everyone. We're walking around here. You're talking to these students. Very nice guy. It seems like maybe there was a metamorphosis or something that happened. But I want to talk a little bit about the coaching. Have you ever, when you were coming through, coming up the ranks, you kind of held yourself to the fire. You were a little ferocious maybe with yourself. Mm-hmm. Have you ever made the mistake maybe of holding kids to that same standard? And what did that look like, if so?
I would say probably the first year or year or two. Again, you got to know that, you know, when I was finished competing in 2016, I went and I was a high school coach, and that was probably one of the best things that I ever did, just because it helped me. Like, I knew what I was walking into, right? Like, I realized real quick, all right, of this room of 40 kids, you know, there's like one or two that like want to be the state champ, not even like can be the state champ, but just want to be, right? Mm-hmm. Every kid was there for a wide variety of reasons. So I had to like real quick, like kind of recheck myself, you know? Like, am I going to walk in here and be a hard ass with all these kids? So hard that like this guy that's here just because his mom wants him to lose a little bit of weight, like he's going to quit in a second, you know? So, and whether it was right or wrong, I just found myself being like, hey, how about I get to know each one of these kids and get to know like what they want out of this and then make a realistic goal for each one of them and, you know, operate that way, you know? And that's, and I think that was one of the greatest things I ever did, was going through that high school thing. And then obviously I landed here, and I could say probably I came here, I was excited about the new gig. You know, looking back, I'm not going to say I necessarily regret things, but for sure you came in pretty hot. You know, you come in thinking like, hey, we're going to change this program. And I'm saying we, that's just my small little part in it, right? Because there's a number of other coaches and I'm not the boss either. You know, we're going to come in here, we're going to make all these changes. And it was probably a little, I don't know what the right word is. foolhardy me, and not arrogant necessarily, but to come in and believe that you could just drop the hammer and it just boom, this is it, this is how it goes.
Well, it's worked in your individual life, so you'd think
yeah,
it'd work
but
in
I'm
the
a different cat.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
I'm a different cat, and that's why, honestly, having Coach Dresser, you know, being having him lead this thing, and this is now the second, well, not including his high school programs that he did the same thing with, but with college programs, the second where he's revitalized the program has been really great, because there's been times, you know, I come into the office like, hey, we got to fix this guy, we got to change this, we got to do this, and it's always like, hey, like, it's okay, like, this is going to happen, this is, you know, very level-headed, which has helped me a lot, right? Helped me a lot to, I always tell people that, you know, one of the best things I ever did was be a part of building a program. And to see what it took to get through that process, rather than maybe just like walking in somewhere to a team that's already fifth in the country, you know, where all those, let's call them growing pains, or all the things that take place to get from 50th to, we're at about what, 10-ish, 12th, something like that, to get to there, you know, having missed all that, you know, so, yeah.
There's a lot of people that might, even wrestlers, serious wrestlers, that might forget that you coached a high school team for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't it you and Mike Zadek or something?
No. Zadek was actually here with us at Iowa State for about a year, year and a half, something like that. So, no, I was in Prairie, Cedar Rapids is
right.
Actually where I coached at.
Why did a two-time national champion and a multi-time world team member coach a high school program?
Yeah, the short of it was basically that again, the short version, is things kind of came to a head there at Iowa. And I was at a point where I needed to go find what I was going to do next. But I had this lag. I had this big gap because my wife was still getting her PhD at the University of Iowa. And I had some opportunities from some college programs to maybe go and pursue. But it was one of those deals where it was like, hey, like, I'm not leaving my wife, and I think we had two kids at the time. I'm not leaving my wife and two kids so that I can travel across the country and start this assistant job or whatever the opportunity was, start this job there. Like, that's just, I mean, my tattoo on my back, I really mean it. You know, like, my family is my priority, and I wouldn't dare do that to them. You know, so any of the conversations I had with coaches was like, hey, thanks for the opportunity, but, like, offer it to me next year, you know, because I'm kind of stuck here. You know, I'm not leaving my wife and my kids. So that was part of it. Part of it was just one of the guys involved with our program was involved with that high school. So they kind of had a need, and he was kind of our connection piece that he kind of basically, let's just call it, created the position and said, hey, they could use some help. Here's something you could do in the meantime. Which leads us into where I ended up at USA Wrestling, and then I did that for a while. You want me to keep going in deep there?
Dude, keep going. All right, this is a long conversation.
Deep. All right. So, yeah, basically I started with the high school program, which was great. Like I said, that was one of the best things I ever did.
Quick question. How did they finish that year? Sorry.
How did we finish?
Because it was one year. Did you have a big impact?
I don't know. We'd have to ask the coaches. I mean, like I said, it was different. It was like anything I've never done before, you know, like as at least being a part of. I want to say we had, I'm going to make up with it off the top of my head here, but like three placers in the state. I don't think that, I can't remember what the team would have finished. But I do remember, like, a funny thing I remember was, I think it was the semis or quarters. I want to say the semis. I had a kid that I worked with a ton, and he was a scrambly dude. So by that, I mean, like, he got in a lot of different positions, and every match seemed to be this way, unless he was just dominating the guy. Would be like, he'd be on his back, he'd have that guy on his back, and, you know, like, there's just a ton of points scored, and as a coach, you know, want to pull your hair out. Well, either way, I remember it was the state semis, I think, and it was one of those matches where it was going back, flipping back and forth. And, of course, as a coach, you just kind of yell, you know, not yell at the ref, but you're in the ref, so you're like, hey, you know, I think that was our points. You know, that was our points, but no one really knows. I mean, it's your best guess. But either way, I just remember sitting there, and the whole crowd was, like, booing. Like, boo, shut up, Metcalf, sit in your chair. I remember thinking, like, man, these people used to like me, and now they're freaking yelling at me, telling me I suck.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, so, but that was good. So, but you know, back to the USA Wrestling. So my kind of path was I had started that gig, and I went through it. And then maybe about halfway through the season, USA Wrestling approached me about doing the development job out there, which I was super excited about because I love freestyle wrestling. I mean, that is like, if and when I was an athlete and even probably as a coach, you know, if you said, hey, pick one to go teach tomorrow at practice, it's freestyle for me because it's fun and exciting. I mean, I love the ability to pick guys up, drop them on their head. You know, obviously probably my style of wrestling, which is strongest at its feet, probably lends more towards freestyle wrestling. So that was a really exciting opportunity. I love traveling overseas. I always tell people it's kind of hostile. You know, you don't just go over there and just get everything you want. You got to kind of fight for mat space. You got to fight for sauna time. You got to, hell, there was times in Russia, we're fighting for water. They won't even, you know, we can't even buy clean water, you know. So to me, I like that challenge, though. Like, it was always kind of fun in a sick, twisted kind of way, you know. So I was really excited about that opportunity. And really how I ended up here, I'll call it dumb luck if you want to, but I had worked with USA Wrestling for probably 6 to 8 months. So I was doing both. I was doing the high school gig, and then I would have to report out to the Olympic Training Center for, like, meetings or training camps or, for instance, we went to Krasnoyarsk, Russia. I would have to basically fly from Iowa to Russia and then back to Iowa, right? Because I told them the same thing, which is, hey, you know, my wife, we got to finish her degree out. You know, I'm not going to move to Colorado and do this. But how it worked is I was able to kind of do it remotely, if that makes sense, for the time being. Well, come around about, I'm going to make up this stuff, May, let's call it. My wife was getting ready to graduate, and we had literally packed up our Suburban and our kids, and like the next morning we were going to drive to Colorado, and we were going to find a house, whether it was rent one or buy one or whatever. And had we been a day later, I probably wouldn't have went back on this, you know, because I would have already been out there making decisions with my life, you know. But that night, Dresser basically got a hold of me and said, hey, do you want, you know, I want to offer you this job. And I mean, it was tough because I'm the type of guy I am, you know, if I say I'm going to do something, it's something I committed to do with USA Wrestling. It was hard for me to even consider not following through with what I had said I would do, you know? But there was just so much going against that, you know, like my wife and her family, you know, she grew up in Iowa City. So her parents, you know, we have 4 kids now. Her parents are an hour and 50 minutes away. You know, having, you know, as much as I travel, would have traveled then, and we would have been 12 hours away from everybody. You know, that was a major piece of it, like staying close.
And family first, like you're saying, too.
Family first, yep. And then on top of that, I knew that part of the USA Wrestling gig was kind of like a stepping stone. You know, like I probably didn't necessarily see myself staying in USA Wrestling's organization forever. That would probably be something that I would do for a number of different years. And then if an opportunity came up, I would probably do that. So I was like, well, why wouldn't I just jump the stepping stone, you know, when I had a great opportunity here. And then finally, I think number 3 for that decision of why I kind of decided to come here rather than there was just the state of Iowa is unbelievable. You know, wrestling just in the state of Iowa, the passion that these folks have. I'm a little bit different than maybe I would say most Iowa kids in that I wasn't born and raised in the state of Iowa, right? Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Michigan. We had our program where I came from was great at wrestling. But when you come here, it's different. You know, like the people care. I always try to describe to kids or to people, the families that ask me about it, you know, like it's the type of deal where you're just like, you could be sitting in the local breakfast joint and someone would just come up and be like, hey, whether I'm a coach or an athlete, hey, great job this weekend. Or, and like the fact that the community's watching and cares, maybe doesn't seem all that important or like a big a deal. But when you're in a different state, or at least from my outside experience, that was awesome. I'm like, your community cares about you. You know, and it's not necessarily about being like a rock star or being really cool or like everyone knows your name. It's not about that. I'm like an energy guy. It's like, it's about the fact that your community is behind you. So when you're training or you're, really a lot of it is training. When you're training, you're getting into the thick of the season and things are getting hard. You know, you've got those – like, hey, that guy that's like 80 years old who said hello to me, he's paying attention right now. You know, that whole community of people is watching me. Like, to me, that's inspiring. You know, that's something that motivated me as an athlete to know that, like, dude, look at all these people we got behind us, right? Like, if I don't have an internal motivation, which I did, right? But if you're ever lacking it on that day, you've got a whole community of people behind you. And that was something that I really wanted to stay a part of, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
You know? And I think it really is something that's in Iowa more than any other state. Yeah. I've heard this from a number of guys who have wrestled in Iowa. Jake Warner talks about it, how, well, he actually gave a bad story, but it still shows mm-hmm. that people care. He went out like to some bar or something after a loss to, who was it? Ferrari maybe or something? Mm-hmm. And some jerk guy is like, what? He made fun of him, basically. Yeah. And it crushed him. But yeah. he still said, whenever him and Max Murin went out to breakfast, lunch, dinner, anything, people are there like, hey, you're the man. Yeah. How's that got to feel? You are a celebrity. Yeah. You're a celebrity that's loved in mm-hmm. Iowa when you're one of their main wrestlers. It's very special. And if I were in that D1 portal or something, how could you not at least consider Iowa strongly?
Yeah.
The Compound, located on 800 North Division Street in Shinoah, Illinois, is a wrestling training facility for youth and high school freestyle, folkstyle, and Greco-Roman wrestling. Here we are driven to teach wrestling technique to athletes who strive for the highest levels of success in this sport. Athletes from the Compound have earned gold at IKWF, IESA, and IHSA state tournaments, as well as national and international competitions, and have gone on to wrestle for Division I colleges. For gold standard wrestling education and development, come to the Compound Wrestling Training Center in Shinoah, Illinois.
We're talking about the incredible story of how you came to Iowa State. Mm-hmm. I want to know a little further back what type of kid even you were. You've admitted that you were wired differently, right?
Uh-huh.
Were you always high energy? Were you always a wrestler? Tell me about growing up.
You know, that's always funny because my perspective is always so different. Now that I have all these kids, you know, I ask my mom, like, hey, you know, I swear I was like this, and it's always different. So my perspective is going to be through my own lens. So I'm sure my family will listen to this and say, you're bonkers. It wasn't that way. But I would say I probably was very high energy. I participated in about every single sport under the sun. Not arrogantly, but semi-arrogantly. I thought I was great at almost every one of those sports that I did. I didn't think that I was super athletic or like super fast, that faster than anyone. But I certainly had like a type of drive and motivation and belief in myself, right? So I just looked back at a couple of different sports, like random ones, like gymnastics, right? Like I did gymnastics for a lot of years. Swimming and diving, I did those. And I don't know if I was great at them, but my memory of it was that I was really good. And I thought, like in gymnastics, I thought I could go to the Olympics in gymnastics. Like I swore I could have. Right. Now I didn't pursue it. That's kind of a funny story in itself. But when you ask about if I was wired different, and when I look at my own children and I look at all the different athletes that I come in contact with, you say, oh, you say you're wired different. That's the best I could come up with, is that like, I think I was just wired that I just believed in myself in everything. Like, I don't know if I thought I was going to be Olympic champion, like swimmer, but I knew I was good at breaststroke and no one ever beat me in it. Right. So I just believe that I was great.
No one ever beat you in it?
Well, yeah, we're talking about little kid stuff. I didn't compete.
Still though,
yeah.
Did you win something?
I won every one of my breaststroke races I won. Now we're talking about little peewee leagues.
I didn't know,
dude,
if there was some state tournament.
No.
Okay.
No. But again, it was, to me, it's like, again, you asked me to reflect, it's like, yeah, I don't know, I just believed in myself like a ton. You know,
I wanna ask you to like play psychologist though.
Yeah.
Why? Where did that incredible self confidence and self belief come from?
I don't know. I want to say probably your parents, you know, not that my parents said, hey, you're awesome, you know, but, you know, just positivity, you know. Again, I tell you, I look at my own kids, and I, like I said, I just think some kids are wired that way. I definitely have one kid that thinks he's amazing, and I've got another one who is just a work in progress, you know, if that makes any sense. Just in him, he's got to kind of prove it to himself, it seems like, a lot.
Is he the younger brother?
No, chance? the oldest one.
Really?
The middle one. I was the middle kid, too. So I always felt like I had my older brother picking on me all the time and my little sister picking on me. So it was a lose-lose because you put your hands on your little sister, you're getting butt kicked, right? Mm-hmm. And then you don't stand a chance with the older brother. I don't know. Growing up, I did everything. I did BMX. I was ranked third in the country at BMX. I did swimming. I did diving. I did gymnastics. I was a pretty good pole vaulter. And then they dropped our pole vaulting program by the time I was in high school. But I was like 11 foot, which is okay, I think, for going as a freshman. I think you got to be like 14 plus.
Mm.
Again, I'm talking about being an eighth grade pole vaulter, and I'm trying to be like, I'm pissed I wasn't a state champ. I'm convinced I could have won it, right? I'm willing to admit I'm probably delusional about a lot of things, but what the heck else did I do? I skateboard. Obviously, a lot of people know that. I did that. It was something I did later in my life, but I did that all through high school.
Can you still hit a kickflip, you think?
Yeah. I'm actually better at a varial than a kickflip. The kickflips,
that's weird.
Yeah, well, they get loose on me for some reason, but when I can, you know, use that back foot, it stays underneath me. I don't know why. It's kind of goofy. Football, played football through high school. I always joke, I got a couple buddies that are not NFL, but like NFL-ish, you know, they played in college and really good. And I always joke with them, like, hey, had I stuck with football, I probably could have played football, dude. Not NFL, but, you know, maybe like a D2 or something.
Pretty fast kid. You must have been fast if you were good at pole vault.
I
must have been,
yeah. I mean, I think I was all right. I looked at it like wrestling. Like, people would come to tackle you, and I would just kind of sprawl and throw my hand down.
Sure.
And, like, just down block you, basically, and just keep going. Or, you know.
Probably hit high crotches when you tackle people.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I tended towards offense a lot. They wanted to always throw me on defense, but again, once you get, you know, I played in high school, so once you get better at the game, you can't just show up. I might be like, oh, go out there and play linebacker. Well, they're calling plays and stuff, and I don't know. Like, I haven't practiced, you know, with you guys, so. Yeah, I don't know. That's the real quick summary of my growing up, but certainly I was super active. I was involved in everything. I'm guessing that I was so active that my parents wanted me to stay involved in everything. But the unique thing, and this is kind of what I try to do with my kids, a little bit to the extent that I can, is that it always came from me. You know, it was always me knocking on the door. I mean, obviously opportunities were presented to us, but it was always, hey, I want to do this.
They didn't drag you to the wrestling tournament.
My parents never said, hey, Brent, you have to go do swimming, or Brent, you have to go do this, whatever the sport was. You know, it was always me. I wanted to do it. And I think that was huge. It was really huge, especially when it comes to wrestling, which is what people really want to hear about. Not my delusions on the other sports, but when it came to wrestling, you know, I found wrestling. We didn't know anything about wrestling. It was kind of dumb luck. I found wrestling. My brother was playing basketball at the time, which is kind of a joke because he was this tall on me.
How old were you when this was happening and your brother Chase?
About nine.
Okay.
So he would have been 2 years older, so he's 11-ish. So, yeah, I'm 9, 10-ish. He's 11, 12-ish, yeah, when we find wrestling. I think it's worth noting that, you know, one thing that I think was done right when I look back on me being a kid was it came from me, you know. It was always, I was begging to go be a part of this, or it was, you know, talking about wrestling. I was begging to go to more wrestling practice, begging to go to two tournaments a weekend.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My parents were just, they were always just along for the ride.
Was wrestling fun to you then as a kid?
I loved it. Well, I'm sure most kids are this way, but I wanted, I wanted everything. I wanted every trophy. I wanted them all. You know, I had a plaque where I'd hang all my stuff up, and that would keep track. So, like, if I had this certain tournament, let's call it, and there was a silver one there, like, the next year we had no matter what, we had to go back to that place, and I had to get the gold for that, you know, the particular tournament, whatever it was, Pee Wee, who knows, right? But I was driven that way. Like, I wanted I wanted to win everything. I wanted every single trophy available. Like, I wanted it. I remember as a kid, which, you know, most kids couldn't even relate these days, but, like, all we had was magazines. We didn't have the internet, right? I remember flipping through, let's call it Wrestling USA or whatever, magazine, and I'm seeing there's all these kids that are my age that are in this magazine. And I'm like, how come I'm not in this magazine? You know, so I asked my dad, I'm like, Dad, what do I got to do? Like, what do these kids do that I haven't done to get in this magazine? And it turns out, like, basically it was like a promotional thing, right? Like, they had gone to a certain tournament, and if you go undefeated in this tournament, then you get your face in the magazine. So my dad went ahead, and it was a dual tournament. So my dad went ahead and created an entire dual team from the state of Michigan to go down, I'm going to make this up, to go down to Tennessee or wherever the heck we had to go to this particular tournament so that I could go there and I could wrestle, go undefeated, and then get in this magazine. You know, like, that's just kind of how I was, man.
What was your dad like? If he's doing that, what did he do for a career? What did your parents do before we go any further? Because that's extraordinary.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very extraordinary, considering my dad was, I'm going to probably murder this, but he was an electrician. He did it for probably 25, 30 years, where he was an electrician and he worked for somebody else. And then around about high school-ish, middle to the end of my high school, he had bought a couple different companies. It didn't work out. And he said, screw it, and he just went off on his own. So he started his own electrical company. So from when I graduated high school, which let's just call it 05, until last year, 2020, so 15 years, the last 15 years, 15-ish years, he's been running his own electrical company, and he actually just retired, and no, he's done with that now, but so yeah, then during through all that, again, my memory was my mom did a variety of different things, but most of my childhood, my mom was a realtor. Mm. So, and there was definitely the unique piece of it all was there was parts of our lives where, you know, my mom was the breadwinner of the family, you know, but we would have never known, you know, we always kind of reminisce on it. You know, being a realtor, your schedule is so flexible, and my mom was always home, that like, it felt like I had a stay-at-home mom, you know. But in reality, you know, she had her office, and when it was time for her to talk on the phone, we knew you don't go knock on the door. And when she had to do her thing, she went and did her thing. But yeah, so, and that's kind of what they did. My dad was an electrician.
Who's the more intense one?
Assuming
you get any intensity from them.
Probably my mom.
Really?
I bet you most of my personality comes from my mom. My mom's a very excited lady, someone who's, you know, she would sit here and yabber, yabber, yabber in a good way, right? She would carry the conversation. I get a lot of my energy. I get a lot of my, like I said, my positivity. I get a lot of my, just my personality, I would say, from my mom. And then I would say, and this is easy to say about dads because that's just how dads are, but probably my work ethic and my toughness and my put your head down, shut your mouth, and go to work comes from my dad. And not that that's who my dad is, but that's who he is. You know, he worked his butt off, and to get to where he got, which was amazingly successful. You know, his company is just killing it.
What's it called, real quick?
Just give Metcalf Electric. Yeah,
oh, that's easy.
Yeah, he just sold it. He just sold it. So he's actually in the process of flipping hands with it right now. But that was the example that I saw every day, was don't make excuses, go to work, go earn it. You know, that sort of mentality, if that makes sense. So,
you know, a lot of people are going to hear that. That's like, that's almost out of the mouth of Tom Brands. But we'll talk about that here in a second. Yeah. I'm most confused by you and your brother starting wrestling at 9 and 11, respectively, mm-hmm. yet going on to have success right away in high school.
Yeah.
You were undefeated in the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. What was your record?
228-0.
228-0 with what, 156 pins?
Yeah, something like that, yep.
That's extraordinary. And what was your brother Chase's record, if you can remember?
Oh, man. Or at least titles. I want to say he won 2 state titles, and I think he lost 3 times, no more than 5. I can't remember exactly, but
most people with that kind of record and that kind of history of wrestling, they start a lot younger than that, or at least they have family members that wrestled. Mm-hmm. Your dad, I assume, didn't even wrestle, did he?
No, my dad did an equestrian Growing up, he's more of a farm kid.
Talk about yeah. a different world. I thought you were going to say basketball. Equestrian. No.
Well, he probably played some basketball, I'm sure, you know, but he was more of a farm kid. You know, all the memories we had, we always tease him because he was sitting on top of a horse with a big, like, afro, you know, showing horses. So, no, he did that. I think he wrestled for like a week and got like a knee infection and his mom made him quit, something like that. So, no background. Again, things I've talked about before, but. You know, probably a mix of things. You know, our personalities and kind of who we are kind of led us, I think, to really love wrestling. My brother and I mean. And then also just dumb luck. I mean, where we at that time, we were moving a lot just because my mom was a realtor. So we always kind of like, I don't know, it seemed like we moved every 3 years or something like that. Just to a new fun house. It was like my mom was just having fun just trying new houses. That's how it felt. It wasn't out of necessity. So we just happened at that time. So Goodrich is where we started wrestling. Davison is the very next. I mean, you can drive 5, not even 10 minutes, and you're in the next town, right? And Davison is where we did all of our wrestling at. So we just happened to live in Goodrich. Well, at that time, Goodrich was one of the best youth programs in the entire state. Like, I remember when I first showed up, like, they had won so many in a row, like, youth, you know, whatever, it was MMWA at the time, I don't think that exists, but they had won so many in a row, and they just had such a good youth program. And then within that youth program, and I've talked about this before, you know, how dumb luck was it that, like, you know, myself, John Reeder, who's a Lapeer kid, but he trained there a lot, and then Paul Donahoe, who's a Goodrich kid through and through, we all grew up as little peewees together, you know, like
something must have been going on at that club champs. Then
whether it was a club or just each other bouncing it up, you know, I think the guys a lot of times can help motivate each other. You know, how ironic is that? You know, it's almost too ironic to just ignore it.
Right.
That like I just where I picked up the flyer and I just went and tried this out. There just happened to be that caliber of coaching and athletes and kids in that program. Right. So that's number one, is I feel really lucky that that's where we started. I mean, you could have put us anywhere else and maybe we had coaches that didn't know what they were doing, teaching headlocks and, you know, whatever. And you don't become who you become. Right. So you got to throw it back to, you know, no one will know this name, but Roger Bailey, like the original youth coach of mine, and kind of what they had going on within that program. And then you insert Roy Hall. Roy Hall worked as the assistant high school coach, so he was kind of a part of that youth, helping out there. Worked there for a year, and then was hired. I'm gonna mix up how many years, but let's just say he was there for a number of years, and then was hired at Davison next door. All of us probably would have stayed at Goodrich. We would have no reason to leave and follow Roy, except for the head coach, let's just call him the legendary head coach that was there for years and years, retired like the next year. So my brother, Wes, was freshman year at Goodrich, and then he retired. So we didn't know what the future of the program was going to look like, but we all knew Roy, who had just taken a year ago the job next door. So we all bailed. We said, screw it, let's just – we'll move, we'll do whatever we got to do. We just got to get 10 minutes that way, and we could be with Roy, who we all know, and obviously Roy, we have a ton of history with Roy too.
Man.
So that's where I always kind of joke and tease and say, like, you know, those, you know, everyone says, you know, we're from Davison, but we all could have been from Goodrich just as easily had things changed a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
Davidson High School had to be pumped to hear about these three studs coming.
Yeah, in. I don't know if they knew anything about us, you know, because we're just little kids. Like, I was still just a seventh grader.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Know? What am I talking about?
Yeah, and I'm sure Davidson was pumped because Chase, you know, my brother was going to be a sophomore. And you know, I had done plenty of butt whooping, so I'm sure that there was some excitement, but when you're that young, you're not paying attention to anything, and social media doesn't exist, you know. The only thing that exists is what you see in your little world, you know. So
right.
If you've been living with an aching back, debilitating imbalances, or any physical discomfort, and just want to get back to living a fit and happy life, look no further than In Motion Fitness Center and Outpatient Therapy at Fairview Haven in Fairbury, Illinois. Our highly skilled therapy team will guide you through proven and effective exercises to help you regain your strength, movement, and mobility, all with our renowned level of love and care. Live your best life. Call our therapy team at 815-692-6724. To find out how we can serve you today.
I'm curious, Chase had a lot of success. Mm-hmm. Your older brother, Chase, had a lot of success in high school. Two-time champ, he said.
Yeah.
Only lost three times or so.
Yeah.
Your guys' paths, and I'd like to talk about that mm-hmm. now, if you wouldn't mind,
yeah.
really began to diverge. And I'll let you take the mic here, but your brother Chase's life tragically ended in a car accident, mm-hmm. and you were a freshman at Virginia Tech, and that's just yeah. that's where the story only begins. This yeah. is all after being a four-time undefeated state champ for Davidson High School.
Yep.
Let's start with, when did your paths start to diverge?
I'm going to say, again, everyone's perspective is so different. Over the years, I could have sat here and said, like, this is exactly what happened, you know? But, you know, as you've reflected on so many years with Coach Hall, who's been side-by-side with us ever since the beginning and to this day still, and then my parents, it probably happened earlier than what I remember, but I'm basically once he went off to college and probably the months leading up before college. Again, with different perspective, I have a different opinion now, but the way that I have always for years have said it, or it made sense in my head, was when we were growing up, my brother's biggest like goal in life and the thing that, you know, when we would sit and talk about it, or we would talk about our heroes or the things that we wanted to do, his goal was always like, I want to be an NCAA champion. Like, if I could win an NCAA title, like, my world would be made. Like, that would be the biggest thing he could ever do. And I just remember as a kid thinking, like, well, I'm going to be an NCAA champ, dude. Like, I want to be an Olympic champ. Are you kidding me? So I think it just right off the get, our minds were in different places, right? Whether that's true or not, that's just how I remember it, is thinking to myself, like, well, yeah, of course we're going to win the NCAA title, like, together. Like, you're going to do it, I'm going to do it. But, like, let's talk about this thing, that gold medal, dude, like, that. Like, that's the peak, man. Like, that's what we should be chasing after. This stuff's going to happen on its way up, right? So I guess how I kind of get there is, you know, I think that as you're getting through high school and he's maybe approaching his goals and where he thinks he wants to be, and he's getting pretty close to him because he's in a Division I college, a great one. It was part of his personality, but part of me was just like, he was good. He was done. He'd had enough. Like, because I don't see, he was wired a lot the same that I was. He certainly had a little bit different personality. He was a lot deeper thinker than I was. But I don't see how you go to any university, and if you really still want to be the NCAA champ, like, you really, like, it's driven and burning inside of you, that you do the things that he did, you know, even if you were surrounded by, I'm not going to say bad people, but around people that were doing those sorts of things, you know, like, that drive inside of you is what pushes you to do what you want to do, you know? So I'm guessing that for whatever varying reasons, he kind of, whether he gave up on that goal or it just didn't seem realistic anymore, or maybe the people around him were getting away with one thing, so he thought, well, heck, if they can do it, I can do it. I don't really know. I'm not going to point fingers at that. But that's where it started to separate. And right away, it became friction within between us, too. Not to say that our relationship went down the pooper or anything like that, but right away, I'm seeing what's going on. You know,
what's going on?
Oh, just like marijuana, partying too much, stuff like that. Where I'm not gonna say we were raised this way, but the way that I was and how we were generally raised was we didn't drink alcohol. You don't touch drugs for sure. And I just, yeah, before I went off to college, I remember it just being around it so much, you know, like, I remember driving them once and like they were rolling, like, it's probably the only, I don't think I've ever seen weed any other time in my life. Not to say that I'm sheltered, but, like, was with my brother rolling it next to me in a car when I was a senior in high school. You know, like, that's probably the last time I can think of, like, being that close to weed, right? Because I just didn't put myself in those situations. So that's when, and then I fought back with that, you know, where I was like, dude, like, what the hell, man? Like, I thought you wanted this. I thought you wanted that. Like, that isn't that. You know, those two things don't go together. And so that's kind of, if you want to know where we diverged, it was probably around about that year leading up into college, you know, and then college didn't, it went the wrong way, you know, went the wrong way quick. I don't know exactly the whole story. No one still does, but his freshman year, this is where it kind of ended for him. He fell out of his third story dorm window in like January, freezing cold winter in Michigan, three stories down. Snapped his femur. They found him the next day in the window well. Luckily, alive.
Alive.
Yeah.
The next day in the middle of winter. After falling.
They found him the next morning. Yep. So, and that's what, 35, 40 foot, however, and he ended up falling. So that snapped his femur. So all of his, and again, I'm not giving him a break, but this to me was the point where it was over for him, was he couldn't wrestle the same anymore, you know, because he was a way better wrestler than I was. If you were going to talk about like athletic gifts, speed and all the great things, I'm athletic, I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't, but he was a better version of that. You know, he had the explosive power that I never had. He could do the quick, slick stuff that I didn't have. I was a little bit longer than he was, you know.
He's a fast twitch guy.
Yes. So close, more like my mom, right? My mom was a runner. She was a gymnastics chick, you know. I don't mean that in a mean way, but that's what she, you know, that's kind of her body type. So he couldn't wrestle anymore after that. He did. He was still on the team. It just wasn't the same. You know, once you got a pole in your leg, it was just, I think it was too hard for him to come back. And I think that whatever direction he was going, he just, you know, kept going. So, that's where we diverged, I think. And then, you know, I guess a lot of different ways could have happened. But to me, I just stayed true. I just stayed true with what I knew and what I wanted. If you want to, you know, fast forward to his death, again, you've got another point there. And this is kind of how I always looked at it, was, you know, you've got a point there where, you know, it was tough, but it also wasn't, like, surprising. You know, I remember getting the call and my dad saying, hey, you know, your brother, you know, passed away last night, car accident. And my first answer was, of course.
Is that what you said on the phone?
I said, of course. Like, it ain't, like, mad, right? So, again, that was our relationship that my brother and I had. Like, it was like a... I don't want to say disappointment, but it's like, dude, we've done this together. You know, we've chased these dreams together, and then now you're doing this, man. You know, so that was already kind of there, you know. So, of course, was the first thing I said, was, of course he did. Like, I'm not surprised, you know. Well, and it hurt. Of course it hurt hard. And I went through a little phase of grieving, let's call it. But basically, I came to the realization is, you know, like, I got one or two roads. You know, like, I keep on keeping on like I was, and I sometimes say this, like, almost forget like it happened and just keep being me, or I let this destroy me, you know? I got, those are the two choices I had, you know? And I just chose, hey, keep on keeping on, dude. Like, keep going, because this event in my life was going to happen, or even if it didn't happen, you know, if whether it happened or not, this road has to be carried on, you know? And that's kind of how I looked at it, you know.
You went to class that same day, didn't
you?
Yeah. You got the phone call and went to class?
And I hung up and I walked to class, got a 7:30 a.m. class, or 8 or whatever, you know. I walked there with my roommate, you know. Same thing, carry on, man. And not that, and again, it sounds really like insensitive, you know, but I don't know, like, maybe that's what's drawn me to wrestling so much, is that it's so simple, like, when you win and you lose, like, there's no excuses. Like, I just lost. Like, did I lose? I can't point fingers at anybody. I can just point them at me. And that's kind of how I think I operate is, you know, that happened. All right, phone is hung up. Like, what are my two options? Go into my room and cry, do something destructive, or what was I going to do without that phone call? I was going to go to class. I might as well just carry on, go to class. That's how I operated at the time, you know, because those two things weren't going to help, you know, being destructive, sitting, like, in that moment in time, I needed time to grieve, but just not that moment. Like, I had to go to class, so go to class.
When did you grieve then, if you did at all?
Well, Tom Brands came, found me in class, pulled me out of class, said, hey, dude, you don't need to be in class, which I didn't need to be. But, and I went home, I don't remember, maybe a week or two spent with my family, and just, you know, I think that was probably my grieving period. Honestly, there's probably been a a grieving that's occurred over a number of years, you know. But yeah.
Would you say that you became a rock for your family at all during that time? I know you have a younger brother, correct?
Sister. Yep.
You had a younger sister at the time.
Yep.
But you were the star athlete.
Yeah.
You were the guy going to the great college with Olympic champ Tom Brands as your coach. Was there more pressure now since...
I don't think I ever looked at it that way, but you bring up a pretty good point in that maybe it was easier for everybody, and by that I mean my mom and dad and my sister, to just turn their energy towards me and what I was doing rather than face reality. You know, I think that that's probably a pretty good point. I don't think that I ever saw that. I don't think that I put it upon myself like I have to go and do all these things to make my family proud or to do this. Because those things were all things that I wanted regardless of the situation. Like I was pursuing them and it was just business as usual. If that makes sense.
No, that does make sense.
Yeah.
Why did you want to win an NCAA title? That's a weird question. Why did you want to win the Olympics? Why was that such a paramount goal in your mind? It seems like that was almost everything in a way.
Yeah, I think it goes back to, you know, me talking about being a little kid and wanting to win every single trophy available. You know, and that's kind of, I think, how it is. I mean, I look at, you know, I tease my guys now because no one does Greco anymore, you know, at Fargo. They all just do freestyle or, you know, even get guys that don't do freestyle and they do Greco because it's easier, whatever. And I always joke, I'm like, dude, you guys got to do both. Like, my approach to Fargo was I want to win everything. Like, how many stop signs are they giving out today? They're giving out 2 per weight class. All right, well, then I'm trying to go get both. You know, and the same thing with what's UWW, but was Feelers back then. Like, I was trying to win every single, like, you know, tell me what the highest award I can get is, and I want to go get it. And I want to get as many as possible. So if I got 4 years to get them, I'm going to count them up how many I can get. I'm going to try to get them all. And if I can't get them all, I can't get them all, you know, but that's how I'm going to pursue it. And the same thing with college, right? Like, I had 3 opportunities, right? Well, you bet what I wanted. I wanted 3 NCAA titles. I wanted 3 Hodge trophies. That's what I wanted. Now, I didn't get that, but that's just, I don't know whether that's weird or not. I mean, I think it should be pretty normal for a guy to want it all.
This is a ridiculous comparison, but it makes me think of, there's not many people like this exactly, like that tick just like this, but Conor McGregor had an obsession with the belts in the UFC.
Sure,
like, I want all the belts. All the belts. And then I want to go to boxing. I want to run boxing. I want to own boxing.
Yeah.
And it seems like the Brands brothers, right? Everyone hears them, oh, I hate the pain of losing. I like to win, but I hate to lose, right? Yeah. That's what they said in this little documentary that the Big Ten Network made for them. Yeah. You seem like a guy, though, who loves to win maybe more than hates to lose. Is that fair?
That'd probably be pretty fair, yeah. Huh. And not that I want to lose. Sure, but, not that I want to lose, but for sure I've been... I'm definitely driven by the result, right? Like if you said, hey, you know, you want to go wrestle this match, you get a car to beat that guy and you get, you know, a toothpick for that one, I'm going for the car. You know, I guess if and then part of it too is like I think as you're coming up through the sport, less now, but you're aware of a legacy. You're aware of, you know, making your imprint on the sport of wrestling, you know. And whether, I mean, I didn't necessarily do that to the impact that I wanted, but my thought was always, on top of, you know, winning everything, was being the greatest to ever do it, you know, and I was not. But why not pursue it? You know, why would I enter, you know, college? Why would I enter anything and not try to be the greatest to ever do it, you know? So.
You think that's a common way of thinking. It makes sense to you, but it's
it does, yeah, and that's rare. What I mean when we go back to you know where we started with being a coach, and then you say, hey, do you operate the way you do? I'm like, no, I've toned it back a bit because I realize that everyone doesn't come in with that. Now, I think I like to think that I could teach them and that I could bring them along and get them there, but I don't know.
Is anyone in the room here at Iowa State like that?
To the extent that I am, no. I mean, no one is... No one's going to be like another person. But what's getting very exciting about it for me is through this process, I would say right now we're just getting into a group of guys. And by that I mean the guys that we have currently on our roster and then the fresh group of guys that are coming in. where these guys are going to be more hearing and talking my language. You know, that's exciting to me that, like, you know, we're getting kids that just want to win and want to be the best and come to practice every single day, excited to be there. Not because, oh, I have to be at practice. I get to be at practice, you know. And that's, again, I mean, that I don't know that you can teach someone to love training, right? I don't know that you can teach someone to want to be the greatest and want to dominate everything. I think that's part of, again, we're only going to get them for 4 years, 5 years max, right? So that's what I'm really excited about, is I think that we've got a bunch of guys that are wired that way, and I'm excited to work with that, you know, have that group to work with.
It seems like that mindset is something that comes from childhood almost. It's like it's almost got to be in there from an early age.
Yeah, or the coaches can teach that, the parents, the, you know, all the people. I always tell people, again, this isn't to cop out or anything like that, because everyone wants to say, like, oh, I can develop anyone. Yeah, I mean, of course you can develop an athlete. But let's just face the facts. I mean, if a kid is for 18 years hits a shot one certain way, and then you've got essentially, you got 3 years-ish to do it, because you don't even get the last year, because the last year is when they're going to perform, right? So you get 3 or 4 years. Are you going to completely change someone from 18 years of habits or thinking or whatever in 3 to 4 years? No, I mean, you could tweak and you can work on that, right? But, like, to completely overhaul a kid's mindset, if a kid thinks that he's a loser,
right,
you're just going to completely make him super confident. I think that's really hard to do. You know, it can be done. I'm not saying it can't be done, but mm-hmm. It's hard to do. So, I don't know where I'm going. I'm not saying that you can't coach a guy, because you can, but it's a lot easier to teach a guy some fine-tune their technique if they already believe that they're great. You know?
Right.
Yeah, it's not even about the winning. Put the winning aside, dude. Like, I don't even care. You don't have to go win Super 32s in Fargo. But if you believe and you want to be, like, deep down, like, you want to be in that conversation, you want that, I can see it in your eyes, and I'll see it every single day when you come to practice, because you're going to come in, like, excited, right? And it's going to burn you when you lose sprints and when you get your butt kicked in practice, which is going to happen. It's going to burn you. And you may not throw a fit, but you can, again, I can see it in your eyes that it matters to you, that it matters to you that you win, right? And that you, again, it's not about winning, but it matters to you that you're getting your butt kicked and that you want to be in a different place than you are now. You have a chance. That guy's got a chance, right?
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Hey, we're about to keep talking about some really interesting stuff here, yeah. But I want to, just for the sake of chronology, keeping this thing going in the order that it's going, you were at Virginia Tech.
Yep.
You got the tragic news that your brother Chase had died. You went home for a couple weeks. Well, then, just to make matters a little more chaotic, I believe Tom Brands, who was the head coach of Virginia Tech, who you came to Virginia Tech presumably for, correct me if I'm wrong there.
Yep.
Okay, and he got a job offer for the University of Iowa to replace Jim Zaleski.
Yep.
He says, "All right, hey, Brent, I'm taking it."
Yeah.
And maybe takes you and a few guys with you. And I don't know why. I think Doug Schwab was hanging out with him in that room for a while.
Yeah.
I saw some YouTube videos of them training together. He says, "Hey, we're going to be going. Come with me. You're going to lose a year of eligibility."
Yeah.
And you said okay.
Yeah.
Fairbury Furniture in Fairbury, Illinois has added over 7,000 square feet to their showroom, and that means more selection for you. Why wait for your furniture? You can buy anything on the showroom floor and take it home today. So hop in the car and take the short drive to Fairbury Furniture, where customers love their selection, pricing, and their take it home today power. So many Bloomington Normal residents have made Fairbury Furniture their favorite furniture store, just 26 minutes away in downtown Fairbury.
Hurry down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
What was going through your mind at that point in time? That sounds ridiculous.
Well, it probably does.
A ridiculous time, not a ridiculous decision.
Yeah, well,
but a wild time.
Yeah, things have changed so much. But, you know, I guess the perspective you got to have is, one, so Roy, which we haven't even talked about Roy Hall enough, but it's fine, as he's been spoken about a ton. You know, Roy was my childhood coach, you know, starting back when I was young, and then when we all moved to Davison, right? But even when I was young, you know, he would spend, wish I could know exactly, but I just want to say he would come over once a week. Once a week, my parents would pay him to come over, and I've later found this out, because when I was young, I would always lose to the Schlater brothers, okay? Dustin and CP Schlater. My brother would wrestle CP. I would wrestle Dustin. Do you know those names?
Ohio absolutely. Kids? Of course I do.
All right. We would always lose to him. Every single national tournament we went to, we'd lose, we'd lose. So how I've now heard the story is that they brought Roy in and said, hey, your job is to help them to beat the Slater brothers, right? So either way, so we start working with Roy, and again, the two personalities, my brother and I, my brother took it really serious. I just remember being kind of like a jackass kid who, like, he would teach us all these things, and I would kind of, like, roll my eyes or whatever. But the thing that he would do every single time, he'd show up at the house. We had VHS, all right? I don't even know. Do you know what VHS is?
I'm not. Just barely. You're not even, what are you, 36?
I'm 36, yeah.
Yeah, we're not that far apart. Right. Yeah, I know
so
what VHS
he'd
is.
Have the VHS that was the Brands Brothers, and we'd stick it in. And we'd sit and watch it just over and over. And he would, you know, I remember we would sit up front in the chair and he would sit behind. He was probably, you know, because he's an intense guy himself. And he always tell us, he's like, you guys want to win. You want to be great. You do this. You do this. You wrestle like this. You wrestle like this. Right? So, you know, where did the intensity come from? Where did, you know, just through osmosis, let's call it, even brainwashing, you know, starting from whatever age we were around about that time, 10, 11 for myself, all the way up through high school, you know, it was like, that's how you train. That's how you wrestle. That's how you win, right? So when it was to be recruited by Tom, it was a pretty no-brainer for me, right? So I think myself, coming from myself, and then I'll even speak for the other guys, too, that transferred, they went there for Tom Brands. They went there for the impact that whether it was his legacy or him personally, because I think a lot of those Iowa guys knew him pretty well from the Iowa room. They went there to be with Tom Brands. So when he was hired at Iowa, it was a no-brainer. I mean, we didn't go to Virginia Tech because of Virginia Tech wrestling.
Right.
You know, so I don't even think it was one of those deals where it was like, hey, you want to come with me? It was like, well, crap, I guess we're going to Iowa now, you know?
Was it good news, though? Because it's like, now you're home. Now you're at Tom's home, too.
Well, to me, again, you got to know I'm from Michigan. Like, I was recruited by Iowa, but I didn't take a visit to University of Iowa. So, like, to me, it wasn't about – I was really big on, like, your coach's relationship and someone who inspires you. Again, I'm a big energy guy, right? So I was big on, like, when he came and he spoke in my house, to me, I was like, boom. Like, I'll run through a wall for that dude.
Why? What'd he say to you?
Doesn't even matter. I mean, I don't even know. Like, it doesn't even matter because what it was exactly right. What I needed to hear, uh-huh. Which is you got me excited. I'm fired up. I'm motivated. You're speaking my language. So by when I say it doesn't matter, I mean, I don't remember, but it doesn't matter, right? Because it's whatever it is that gets you fired up. It wasn't even one of those deals. Like, it was like, we're going. Because even part of the recruiting process, and this is where it gets a little funky, was, you know, when we're obviously everyone knew why we were going to the school. We were the number one ranked recruiting class going to Virginia Tech, who was the worst in the country. So every person that walked in that door asked the AD and said, hey, like, we know that this could happen. If it happens, you know, can we leave? Can we transfer? And we were assured, yes, of course, right? So, and again, I'm not going to start nitpicking and pointing fingers and things like that. But certainly the administration knew before we ever got our foot on campus what was going to happen. We knew if Tom ever left what was going to happen. And then when Tom left, it was already assumed. I'm going to guess that the entire administration knew what was going to happen, which was this big batch of guys that he just brought in are all leaving, right? I don't think that was a surprise by anybody. So that's how that went down.
So you wind up at Iowa.
So yeah,
a story that was. Not to just jump over that whole thing, but that's wild. But the story really gets good. The Brent Metcalf legacy truly begins, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
At the University of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
What was the welcoming party like for you there? How did it feel to walk onto that campus, into that black and gold room, to see that Gable statue, all that stuff? How'd that all feel?
Again, I have a different perspective. So, like, growing up, I knew who Dan Gable was, but I didn't know the legacy. You know, like, this isn't rude against Dan. I'm just a little peewee kid. There's no internet, dude. If a VHS of Dan Gable wasn't put in front of me, I wouldn't know who he is. And what VHS was put in front of me? Tom and Terry brands. That's all I knew. In fact, half the wrestling in those videos with them in USA Wrestling singlets wasn't even in Iowa singlets. So, certainly, I did not know what I was getting myself into. Like, I knew about Iowa wrestling-ish, but I didn't, you know, to say what I know now, yeah, it would be very easy for me to say, wow, that must have been cool. I just thought I was going to a different school.
Like, No, come on.
Like, I honestly, I understood that there was Iowa, but I didn't understand. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not as easy. And again, it's people who say you're stupid, but no, like, we didn't have anything. How could I have possibly known? Like,
That's true.
Again, unless somebody, and again, my parents weren't wrestling people, they're not putting this information in front of me. Like, I'm only seeing whatever I can get my little mitts on, right? And the only thing we had was these Tom and Terry videos we got shown and then the USA Wrestling magazines, right? So I would say that my Iowa IQ was pretty low, right? And I knew, I wasn't stupid. I knew that Iowa was a good wrestling school, but I didn't know, like, no. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. You weren't well immersed in the rich history of Iowa.
I wasn't in awe. Like, I didn't show up like, oh, I was just like, all right, well, this place is a little bit nicer than the last one. All right, let's get to work, you know? Like, but I do remember, and I don't know if I told my parents this or a friend this, but I remember something that was really impactful to me was, like, the first day, in fact, the shorter version is I couldn't be on campus because we were ineligible. So I lived the entire summer at the Olympic Training Center with Terry. Okay, so I lived out there because I qualified for a bed and everything. I lived and trained out there, and then I went to the World Team Trials. This would have been in 06, right? In 06. And then after the trials were over, school started, and I came down and I moved in. So I think my parents actually moved me into my house or where I was going to be living, and I wasn't even there yet. So, like, I showed up first time on campus, like, walked in and met my new roommates. Right, which was a house. It wasn't a dorm. So I never even, like, visited the campus. I just went blind. Like, all right, we're going.
Wow.
Yeah, never.
You truly were following Tom Brands.
Yeah, like 100%. And it didn't matter to me. Because, again, the way I was, like, you should have saw what we had at Virginia Tech. It was a dungeon with a mat and a half. I was good with that. You know, that's what my high school, we won, like, all 4 years we were there, but like 7 of the 8 years that in that surrounding time we won a state title and we had a little dingy hole. Like, I didn't need fancy stuff. It wasn't about that. I probably liked it that way, right? So it didn't matter to me, like, whatever it was going to be. But the impactful to me, going to get back to it, was I remember, let's just call it the first night, but one of the first nights I arrive, I just meet all my new roommates. A number of them I knew because I compete, like Morningstar. I moved in with Morningstar. Him and I competed against each other growing up. So we go out to like a bar or whatever. And I think at that time, at 19, you can get in the bar. So they're walking me in. And, you know, I remember like showing my ID. And they're like, you don't need to show your ID. I know who you are. And I'm like, I'm just a dude. Like, what are you talking about?
Back to that special part about Iowa.
Yeah, you know, and this, I'm like, okay, whatever, like, this is weird. So then I walk in, and I remember, again, this is kind of weird, but this is my first impact. I remember, like, introducing myself to, like, a group of girls, right? That, like, we just walked in and walked, I'm like, hi, I'm Brent. Like, we know who you are. And they're all like, yeah, we know who you are. We're really excited for you to be here. And I was like, I don't think it was staged either, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think, because I didn't, like, go hook up with the girls or anything like that. It was interaction, just like a peer interaction, and being like, what the heck are these people talking about? Like, how could this person possibly know who I am?
Did you like it, or was it freaky for you?
Of course, yeah, it's cool, but like, it was just something that impacted me where I was like, wow, like, these people, like, how do these people know who I am? Like, I just stepped on campus, right? But just via, you know, like, the recruiting world or the hype world, right, of college athletics, they just knew, right? They knew and they cared, you know? So I did feel it, but I definitely don't think I came in with like an awe. I probably did the opposite. I think you could ask some of my teammates. I came in and like I wanted to win. I mean, I knew that we had I think at Virginia Tech, and I swore this too. I swore we'd win at Virginia Tech because the group that we came in with was dang good, and we were bringing in a great class. And then now we came to Iowa, and I knew that they had already had some guys there that were pretty tough. And I was like, dude, we can win, right? Like, we can win now. And I probably more than people like, kind of took a leadership role and just stepped in and just started dropping the hammer, like traditional Metcalf style. Like, you know, like, dude, it's going to be this way. This is how we're going to win. We're going to, and I probably lost some friends, but I think at the end of the day, I have great relationships with those guys because we really, and I, by that I mean those guys like the Morningstar and Phil Caddy, even Jay Borschel and Slate, like that group, that class, because that class brought, you know, was the emergence, you know.
You said you laid down the hammer. You were just a sophomore. You were this young kid who came in.
Yeah.
And what, you going to correct me on something? Or?
No. I'm listening to you. Sorry.
No, sorry. So you came in. You were this young guy. You laid down the hammer, traditional Metcalf style. You took a leadership role.
Yeah.
You just got here.
Yeah.
You don't even know the history of Iowa.
Yeah.
You're not immersed in this. These kids grew up loving Dan Gable, Tom and Terry, et cetera, et cetera. But you step in and you do this and you say you lose some friends. What would it be like for me if I were a freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, doesn't matter, if I was already in that Iowa room and I see you walk in, what do I see Brent Metcalf saying and doing?
Well, hopefully I'm doing everything I'm saying, because if I'm not, then I better shut my mouth, right? But I guess what I mean when I say that, one example sticks out to mind, and I'll say this story only because Mark just told this story, Mark Perry. But I just remember one of the first group ones, it's summer running, like this time of year you get there, and we were doing sprints, and I don't know, I was just... Again, the way I was raised was you compete at everything, you win at everything, you try to win at everything, right? That's not to say I won all the sprint laps. But, dude, I was trying, like, to the point where I might have even tried to tackle you to try to win, right? That's how much it mattered, right? And Mark Perry, and again, he just told this story. I heard it that he was telling it, so I'll say it.
All right. One of the
first ones, we were out, like, on the grass field. We were running. We had probably done a bunch of other stuff, but I just remember running sprints. And he was the last one. I think he was the returning national champ. I think he just won the nationals. And he came back, and he was last place. Like, last, behind the heavyweights, last. And I remember freaking out on him, being like, what the F are you doing? Like, this is not how it's going to be. There's no way you should be last. And we get into an argument of sorts. I don't remember. But basically, it came down that Mark ended up turning around and walking away and left. Left, right? And I just remember kind of retroactively looking back, being like, ah, like, who the hell do I think I am? You know, like, I just showed up, and then the first week, I'm kicking the national champ out of the freaking workout because he's not running hard enough. You know? So that's what I mean.
That's ridiculous.
Right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, again, I was maybe a little bit of a psycho. But, I don't know. I mean, everyone else, dude, that group worked. We freaking worked, dude. We were not just a giant group of super talented rock stars, you know. It was a bunch of workhorses. That group was, dude, and we earned what we got there.
What a story that is, though. That's incredible. That was preseason. You had just got there.
Yeah, just got
there. You called
out
the returning net. How, what weight was Mark Perry again?
65.
And you were what, 41?
49. Yeah.
And you called
this
guy out.
And I could say that because Mark and I are buddies now.
Right,
and
sure.
I could even joke with him about that time, right? But I mean, we'd go into a lot deeper, but Mark's maybe an example of a guy that can be great, but didn't need this, you know, didn't need me. Like, if I was his coach, he probably wouldn't have won a national title.
Sure.
Right? Because I would have been grinding on him and calling him a sissy or whatever because he didn't train and do it exactly this way. Whereas Mark Perry just needed to do it a different way. He could still win.
Man, I wish they had cameras back then going more often. That would have been a sight to see you calling out the incoming sophomore, calling out Mark Perry. I guess you were a freshman, weren't you? Or no?
Well, no, I would have been. Yeah, I would have been. A redshirt freshman because that first year I was ineligible.
Right.
So I didn't even. So that was maybe the other interesting piece too. Was like I was trying to. I don't know why I took this leadership, but I basically was like, "Hey, this is my team. We're going to win." You know. I couldn't even go out and prove it. Like, I couldn't even wrestle a duel. Like, I'm in the room trying to be, like, a leader and trying to, you know, set an example when I can't go and do it.
Wow.
I'm eligible.
So you were being a leader.
I'm trying.
And you were still busting your butt in that in that room, but sitting on the bench come meet time?
Yeah.
Was that torture for you?
I just knew what it was. I mean, yeah, it sucked. But it was also one of the best things I ever did, too. Because I did get to travel overseas. I did get to wrestle in a number of senior level events where I didn't win. I didn't win anything, to be honest. But again, talking about, you know, maybe my positivity, was, but I was like really close.
You talked about taking down like a world champ or maybe a guy who went on to be an Olympic champion.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, Farnayev. No, this was a dual meet, and I was getting ready to go, and like this old dude's over there, and I'm Terry comes up to me because he was still with USA Wrestling at the time. He's like, "Hey, you hear everyone chanting? They're saying you can't beat our 2-time world champ." And I was like, "That dude's a world champ!" Like, dang.
And how old are you, just for people?
I'm just, I'm 06, man. I'm 19 years old, whatever I am. You know, like, I'm just fresh. It was my ineligible year, you know? It would have been my red shirt freshman year. So I go out there, and I don't win, but it was, like, close. It was close enough to where, like, had I scored one more takedown, I would have won. And, like, maybe I was in on the leg, and I didn't finish or whatever. But I remember walking away and just thinking, like, dang, like, I was close. Like, I was close to beating that 2-time world champ. And then I wrestled Sahin, who went on to win the Olympics in 08. And I got screwed. Like, I beat him fair and square, and they just straight up screwed me. They just decided, no, you didn't win. So same thing, though. Like, that's not the important part. The important part is like, I watched this guy win the Olympics in 08. And I'm like, dude, like, you're asking me, can I win an NCAA title? Pfft, yeah. You know, like, that was my mind. That's how I believed. I was like, if I'm there, then I'm there for sure.
Yeah, more than believe, you were certain.
Yeah, because
right?
It was doing it. It wasn't making up things in my head. You know, I mean, maybe I was to an extent. But you know what I mean? Like, those little stepping stones, I think, are huge. I think it's a huge reason why, again, we're going in big circles here, but why you're seeing a lot of our younger guys come out and win right away in the United States, and by that I mean the true freshmen, is because the access that I didn't have. Well, I didn't have the cadet worlds. I wrestled in one junior worlds. Like, my very, was like last year they had a junior world and I wrestled in it. But you know, they came up through the system, and I'm gonna guess in the same way that I did, like, when you compete at that level and you're having success at that level, and then you come back to the United States and you think to yourself, all right, I was just a world champ. Like, can I beat the best guys in the country? Can I be a state champ? You know what I mean? Like, it kind of pales in comparison. And not that it makes you overconfident, but certainly I do believe that when two guys put their feet on the mat, you know, they step across from each other, one guy knows he's going to win and the other guy wants to win. And that's usually how it works out. And obviously you're going to have the clash of two guys that believe they can win. But just in general, like, you know, when you know, and you win.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think it's true. I don't know how to explain it other than that. Like, you know deep down inside, you know how much work you put into it. You know the sacrifices you've made. You know everything. And you can look at that guy in the eye and you can be like, you're not beating me. I put all the technique aside, dude. Like, I'm not losing, right? And I think more often than not, that's usually how it works out.
Because
you're not going to give shit up. Who cares if he gets in on your leg? Like, if you know it that deep, he's not finishing. Period. Right? Now, you're going to trip over your laces and our accident's going to happen. Are you going to get caught in a headlock? Sure. Yeah. But consistency over time, when you put the work in and you know, you're going to win. You're going to be the guy.
You make it sound so simple.
It is, but you got to do those things because you also know that you don't know. You know when you took shortcuts. You know when, again, it's not about winning, but it's about when you're running those laps on the grass field. And this is how it was for me, is that I left a little bit out there, you know. So when my foot goes on the line, I also know, you know, I left a little bit on that grass field. You know, so then there's doubt, right? You get what I'm, are you going with me here?
Absolutely.
And so yeah, when you didn't give it all, every one of those moments, would they all exist everywhere, you know, when you took a shortcut or all the things that you didn't meet up to where you, maybe the goal was the expectation, you know those things too. So those add up against you, I believe.
You seem like a guy whose conscience would eat you alive if you left a little something on the football field, on the wrestling mat. You ever walk away from something knowing you left effort? You didn't give your 100% effort, and then you have to run back, go back into the room, unlock the door, turn the lights back on, and hit some more shots.
Yeah,
or something.
Things like that. Certainly, yeah. I mean, not super crazy, you know. Like, I couldn't come up with a big story off the cuff right now, but probably operate that way. I mean, again, I am not going to pretend that I'm perfect and that I do everything right all the time, but I try to, right? Like, if you said, I'm looking out at these bleachers here, like, if you said go run those things, I'm not going to promise you any time that I can run them in right now. But I'm going to promise myself inside my guts, and this is a battle between me and me and not you, that I'm going to freaking run that thing. And then after I get done, I'm going to know whether I did it or not. Right? Does he get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, I'm going to know whether I freaking left it out there or whether I did. And then, yes. You know, honestly, I think that there's peace in living with, like, you know, if I don't quite do my best, like walking away and knowing it and letting it eat at you. Because you know what? You get to come back, and then it's like, all right, round two.
You have no idea. You're asking me if I understand this. It's not I understand this because I'm the same, wired the same way. It's not that, but it's music to my ears what you're saying because I've listened to guys like you. I've listened to Gable. I've listened to Tom and Terry. And I'm not a phenomenal wrestler. I've wrestled my whole life. I've had limited success. It's more like 4-time qualifier at state. Mm-hmm. Never even won it. Stuff like that. But it's God, and then it's some of what my family showed me, but it's more, almost more than anything else, is the sport of wrestling and the philosophies. It sounds weird. Somewhat of the philosophies I've heard you say, Brent, mm-hmm. have led to my success in this industry, in working with this tech stuff, and the podcast, and the talking to people, because I'm so disciplined, and I'm going to learn how all these wires work. I'm going to learn how to do a podcast on the go that doesn't suck. I'm going to learn all this stuff, and that's a promise between me and me. And I'm going to go to sleep late at night because I'm going to stay up. I'm going to do more work than the other guys who are doing their podcast. Mm-hmm. It's almost comical to have the mindset that's supposed to be utilized, that you're utilizing for such an intense sport at the highest level, to utilize that for business stuff. But it's entirely possible, and it's music to my ears because it freaking works. And it feels good hearing you say all that stuff. Mm-hmm. If that's any indication, and you said it is, this was your mindset when you were in college at Iowa, that probably didn't jive well with a lot of your teammates. And I'd just like to ask, unless it did, but what was the general culture like from your standpoint in that Iowa room? And I have some stories. I want to talk about a video I saw, but you tell me.
I don't know. I'd love to see some. Here's what I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess early on it made a lot of people uncomfortable. And I'm not going to say I didn't lose friends because, like, I'm still, like, the dude that you're facing with now, that's who I was, you know, but there's switch. I could switch on and off. Right?
Really?
Like, away from the room, we probably got along great. I could tell you a number of guys who probably hated me in the room, but to this day, we're still buddies, you know? Alex starts just being one of them. I love Alex. I love it. Our families, our friends. But I'm going to guess that I was kind of a prick to him when it came to the restroom and kind of, you know, and probably in the room, he probably didn't like me a number of times, you know? And we also competed against each other head to head. So that had to do with it too. I'm going to guess early on because, like, when we got there, and this isn't throwing people under the bus, but it's just stuff that I couldn't believe. Like they would party between duels. Like, we would go, I'm making this up, we would go to Wisconsin on Thursday, and then we'd have to wrestle again on Saturday, and on Thursday they'd go get screwed up, go out and party. And I'd like, what the hell? What are you guys doing? We got to wrestle in 2 days. Like, I'm not anti-alcohol or anything like that, but now is not the time, you know? So stuff like that was going on, and whether I said any, just how I remember just being like, dude, this has to change.
You're like, don't you guys want to be the best?
Yeah, like, this has to change now, right? Mm-hmm. But then I would say by the time, you know, we get through that year, through 08, when we win in 08, I'm thinking we're jiving pretty good. I mean, there was definitely different little groups, but everyone, as far as I could tell, I don't know, maybe you show me something awesome that will be give me some insight, but we were jiving and we were tight. Like, I thought we were tight. I would like to say I'm pretty tight with most of those guys still. Even though we all have different positions and roles, I think that given the right circumstances and the right guards be dropped, it would be just like old times. Because, I mean, I'm talking about that line, your core 10 to 15 guys. So.
Well, I wish I could show you a video. I'm not connected to the internet or anything like that. Maybe I can try after I ask you this question. But the video I was talking about is 10-minute video of an Iowa practice, and here's what it looks like. It looks like guys drilling at first. Everyone's wearing sweats, but before you know it, the whole mat is shiny. And people are sliding all around, and then you think that's like the end, That's when they get up and start running. Mm-hmm. And then they start drilling. And some layers start coming off. And then you see these guys wrestling. You see a guy in a neck brace who's wrestling.
Yeah, it's Joe Kenny. Yep. That's okay. My best buddy.
Yeah. Well, he's wrestling with a neck brace. And guys, you hear guys, you know, going off the mat onto concrete over these bikes. And it's just normal. You see Tom Brands, or Terry Brands, I don't know, just nodding his head, looking at mm-hmm. everything. You guys start running yet again. And then this time when everyone's running, you see in the center, and I mean, guys are hurting. They're hurting. They're running by the camera. They're wincing. Guys are shirtless. No one's wearing all their sweats anymore. And then in the center is you, Brent. You and Doug Schwab. I don't know what Doug was doing in there. He was training for the Olympics or mm-hmm. something, or yep. world teams. And you and him are wrestling in the center, and everyone's jogging around you, but there you are. And this is no disrespect at all, but you sounded like you were crying.
Probably.
You're going,
I was emotional. Oh, yeah.
But you weren't giving up takedowns. And you watch you guys wrestle, and you're fighting with all you got. I don't know how Doug Schwab was still going at that time. You had to be, 35, 36, just like you now. Yeah. And you guys are going hard. You're making all sorts of noise. Everyone's still jogging, and you guys are wrestling hard. You see, not to be a weirdo, I saw Doug grab your stuff one time, and you're already exhausted, and it looks like you're punching each other at this point, but you're just still wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that story because what is that all about, man? Was that normal? Was that just for show? Was that for the cameras? And
no.
What did everyone else react to that like? Because you were the only one doing it in the center.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what that scenario was. It could have been a number of different things. It could have been, you know, a coach sometimes pulls guys up and says, hey, get jogging. And then, you know, he picks two guys like, hey, first takedown. So it's the pressure's kind of on you. It could have been something where the whole group had to score last takedown. And after you get the takedown, you jog. And that Doug and I just took that long to get a takedown. Which is what I'm probably guessing is what happened.
Oh, it wasn't some special drilling session.
I'm
going to
guess that was the case, just because Doug and I would go and we would scrap, and it was, yeah. But I guess the easiest thing I could say is, that's how it was. It was a freaking war zone, and I loved it. You know, I loved it. Right, wrong, or different, I freaking loved it. And that's again, that's how I was brought up and how I was raised. Is that it's a fight. It's a war. You take every takedown serious. Now, if you lose, you don't go and pout and let it destroy your life. You know, of course you move on from it. But it has to matter that much in the moment, right? I would say that anything I've ever seen, and I can about guess what you're talking about, pretty normal stuff, even mild, maybe.
Did you ever come to blows with guys in the room?
Yeah. St. John, probably our assistant coach here, probably the most. So what's unique about Derek is that, you know, by the time he came in, I was the guy, you know. But I remember him coming in as a freshman and just instantly thinking, like, dude, this kid's got it, right? And that's not to say that he came in and he was lighting me up, but it was like he had a fight and he had he just wouldn't stop. Like, I could have scored 100 takedowns in a row, and he'd still get up, and he'd still be trying to score, you know? And by that, I mean, I didn't score 100 in a row, but that's how it felt. It was like, this kid won't stop. Like, this kid scraps for every single inch. I should be hitting a takedown. He should be falling over, and instead, it was taking 5 seconds to finish. It takes me 45 seconds to finish, and I'm exhausted because how hard it is to finish on this guy. He is a guy that I remember – pretty much, like, we joke all the time, but like when we wrestled, we started with our shirts off. So kind of how it went back is you would wrestle, but then what would happen is, you know, when guys were competitive, you know, you start cheap shotting each other, you start pulling on someone's shirt, or next thing you know, the shirts come off because it elevates to that level. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because I don't want no one grabbing me anymore, or whatever. Him and I would start with the shirts off. Like, shirts are already starting.
You know, if it's
like
you're
hockey,
grabbing
dude.
It. Yeah.
Like, when the shirts come off, shit's going down. Mm-hmm. They would start that way because we just knew where this was going to go. And, like, if we asked each other to wrestle that day, I knew what was going to happen. I loved it, right? I don't know what, again, I don't, while he was in college, I don't think we had much of a relationship. Like, I always felt like he hated me. But because I would be a prick, like a wrestling room prick to him, and he would be vice versa. But I loved it. Like, I've told him, he knows this now. I'm like, dude, I loved it. You know how much I freaking respected you? I'm talking to him. Like, he respected you and, like, loved you as a wrestler and a teammate, because I knew every time we wrestled that it was going to be a freaking war, and that, like, I may not come out alive. You know, like, it was going to be that bad, right? And a great story is, this goes into T-shirts, I tell this a lot, is him and I were getting into it once, and I don't remember what. Basically, I think I was in on a single. What I always do, because he was a fighter, like a, in a good way, not a fist fighter, but just like a fight. He'd fight everything, right? Is like if I wasn't having success, I just, like, I cheap shot him, give him a cheap shot. But I always knew, bam, like, he would swing back, right? Because it was his instinct, right? Like, you punch me, I'm punching you back. But it was like my setup. Mm-hmm. I'd hit him, and then I'd wait for him to punch back, and I'd shoot. Right, so pretty sure it was one of them things where I cheap shot him and I waited for him to punch me back and I shot, and we're in there, and like, it never gets to like a fight, so like, he was never punching me, but he was pissed. He grabs my shirt and he rips it off of my back while I'm down here, and he starts beating me with it. Okay, like, he's, instead of punching me, he's got my shirt in his hand, he's hit me with it, pissed off. I remember, like, running away, and he's literally chasing me, smacking me with my freaking soaking wet shirt. God knows why. Who even knows why? You know, it was just because we're both competitors. We don't like to lose. And I'm sure it was going one way or the other. It was going like this, and no one was going to give, you know? So, yeah, that was, you know, talk about the guys that made an impact on me. You know, he's one of them. And that was, there was a lot of examples of stuff like that. But he's one in particular that, if you're going with St. John, at least for me, because neither one of us is going to back down.
You know what? Hey, that was such a good story. You got one more, maybe, like, one more, just quick one, anecdote.
Another good example, when you talk about the intensity of the room, probably best example is our summer training we always did in the field house, which I don't know if you've ever been there, but think of a traditional old field house, and it was so hot. It's Iowa heat, so it's humid and hot as can be in July. And the problem was, is I always wanted to ask him, I never did. We would wrestle so hard, and then at the end we'd do sprints, but it was a joke because the mats had basically just had gelatin on them. You couldn't even run. You couldn't even turn. You couldn't anything. You're just, like, you're just slipping and sliding and falling, right? Well, it was one of those sorts of practices, and then every now and then we would do, like, hey, last man standing wins, which basically means, like, we shake hands, and you have to tell me you're done, right? Like, you got to just say, hey, I'm done, right? Just break, which would be normal, right? So if you're wrestling any given time, if a coach says, hey, open mat, you would wrestle for a while, and then you would just both agree to take a drink. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Yeah, well, I can see how that could almost be dangerous.
But when, like, when the coach says, like, hey, last guy to give, right? That means the first guy to tap, you know, it's over. Mm-hmm. For the rest of practice, you're over, right? So, of course, that incites people to just never stop, right? And especially with wrestling, you can just keep getting your butt kicked, right? So it turns into more of like an MMA, right? Without punching, it turns into like chokeholds and things to like make
forearm
a guy
in the back of the neck, a lot of cross face.
Well, yeah, but even that don't work, because you could like, yeah, you could cheap shot me all you want, but I'm not gonna tap. Like, you got to do something to me to make me give up. Like, unless. Again, it don't matter how tired I am, right? Like, I'm never going to give. Well, I remember going Morningstar once, and it went long. We were definitely the last guys.
Morningstar was 184, wasn't he?
No, he would have been probably 57, 65, something like that.
Oh, I thought he was a much bigger guy, my bad.
No, we trained with each other a lot. He was always, like, a step bigger than me. But, yeah, we trained a lot. And it was him and I in one of those practices, and I remember, like, just wrestling and wrestling and wrestling and thinking, I don't know, like, maybe I get him to, you don't really have a plan, you're just wrestling. And I'm just looking around and being like, we are the last dudes out here. Like, and I don't see this ever end anytime soon. Because, again, like, the script could have been flipped. I was like, Ryan could take me down 100 times right now. I'm not quitting, you know? So it legit turned into, like, I'm pretty sure I had to, like, throw the legs in and, like, what do you call it, bare naked choke or whatever this is called? Like, I had to do that. Like, just to get him to stop wrestling, you know? It became, and I remember, it kind of felt, looking back, it felt like where we were both trying to choke each other, and, like, you know, I don't remember exactly, but just rolling around and basically just thinking, like, I just got to get a lock. I just got to get a lock and just choke the shit out of him, because this is the only way this is going to stop right now, you know? And then I remember getting up and then they're like, all right, line up for sprints. And you can't run. Mm. It was like a joke. It was like you're just walking. Because your feet, you know, imagine, again, like gelatin on the ground, because your feet are soaking wet, the mat. I remember directly after that, like running these sprints where I was just walking. Not because I was tired, but just like, it was like walking on ice, you know?
Does part of you miss these crazy times at all? It sounds insane, but I'm sure it built relationships like you wouldn't believe.
I don't know, miss them. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would desire to today do that exactly. But I do. I mean, I do the exact same stuff. I mean, I'm a wrestling coach, which means through osmosis, I still get to wrestle. Like, if I have the desire to just let it rip tomorrow and go, you know, do that same thing I just described to you, I can do it. Mm. I can just go grab someone and just start going and see if I can make them quit, you know? I mean, I can do that. I have the ability, you know? So yeah, I wouldn't say that I miss it necessarily, but I don't know. I mean, it's, again, going back to where I was, which is, to me, it's exciting that we're getting that team where I'm going to, you know, we can start doing that sort of stuff and we can start challenging them. And there's, you know, you've got enough hard-headed guys on the team that you're going to get, not that you want fighting, but you want fighting. You want everyone in that room to care enough about being the best that they'll fight for it, right? Mm. It doesn't have to be with your fists. Like, you'll emotionally, physically fight to be the best, you know?
Right.
And when you get there, heck, who knows how high you can go, right? Because you're just going to keep doing this with each other, right? And that's, I think that was the biggest thing we had going. I talk about it a lot. You talk about leadership, you talk about teams, you talk about how you build teams. What was unique about, I think, that team in particular and what helped us to grow so fast was that we were all best buddies, right? So whether that was ironic or whatever, but, you know, in that house was Morningstar, me, Slayton, and then the dude with the neck brace, Phil Keddy, who's a 3-time All-American. And we were thick as thieves and everything, right? And it was to the point, in a really healthy way, that we were competitive against each other. So, I mean, think of it this way, like, we were on the lineup together, and I would go out and I would get a tech fall. All right. So if you're Morningstar and you go out and you win by a point, we all go home that night. What are we saying to each other? Yo, dude, you won by a freaking point, man. You're wrestling a dude from, I'm gonna be derogatory here, Northwestern. Like, what the hell? You won by a point? Like, get your crap together. What's wrong with you, you know? And then Keddy got a major, and he's like, yeah, dude, I got a freaking major, and my guy was ranked, you know? Like, and it was in a really, but it was in a positive way. Does that make sense? So to me, it was like our relationship, because we were so tight and because we held each other in a funny way, right, accountable, was I always felt like every time you stepped out on the mat, it was like we were trying to one-up each other. Like, I'm paying attention, and I know, shit, Keddy got a pin. Well, if Keddy got a pin and I don't pin this dude, man, I'm going to have to hear about that later, right? So in a really great way, we were competitive to try to one-up each other, and we all just kept, right, even though we weren't in the same weight classes, right? We didn't necessarily even train, you know, with each other, just side by side with each other. But because of our relationship that we had, I felt like we all pushed each other to get better, right?
That's like the most conducive thing to the male psyche, is friends that are striving to one up you. Yep. It's like nothing makes you get better and better.
Yeah, is it ever going to be okay if I'm like, yeah, I say this whole, again, this is me coaching coming out of me here, you know, like if I watch you for 2 minutes stall at the end to win by one, like you ain't hearing that down, dude. Like I'm gonna hold you against that, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, are you kidding me? You could have definitely took that guy down 3 more times, you know what I mean? You hear that from your friend, there's going to be action,
right?
You hear that from your coach, right? Maybe, right? But you've also heard me say that 100 times, right? But the minute your best friends around you are sending you the same message and you're buying it, right? Like, you're not pissed, you're not butthurt, you're not angry. You're like, no, you know what? I'm going to show you, right? That's a positive environment. And that, to me, can really help a team grow, right? Mm-hmm. But that stuff, it happens organically, right? Like, those friendships got to be built. You can't force kids to like each other, you know? Like, mm-hmm. But So that was one really unique thing I think about, you know, that time period, you know.
So. Now, at your time at Iowa, it almost seems like a small part of your career in a weird way.
Yeah.
The two national titles. Mm-hmm. Two national titles. You won them. You ran off the mat. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
The ref had to hold your hand. There's a funny. There's funny clips on YouTube of that.
Yeah.
He's holding your hand. You're trying to run away, and then you just off the mat, and you're away. Did those national titles feel like a major thing? Were you exceptionally proud? Was it a dream come true, or was that not the case?
I would say, again, there's definitely been a lot of growth in my life and who I am, and right? And I'm not to say that I'm ashamed of that, because what I could tell you, like me running off the mat all the time is just an inherent just habit of who I am and a bit of my wrestling DNA, right? So again, how I was raised and the mentality that I had was that it's never over, right? It's always the next thing. So, you know, when you're done competing, you go out and you compete, and then as soon as the match is over, you go find a spot to get extra work in. Right, and whether it's sprints or stance motion, the work doesn't even matter. It's about your mind going somewhere else and thinking, all right, I just did that, great. How can I one up that? Right, or maybe I won by a point. Well, next time I want to get a tech fall, or next time I want to get a major. How can I one up that performance? Right. So the runoff is just, I think, an ingrained part of me, which I can't help, especially that time in my life. Really hard for me to stop in the moment and be like, embrace this. And instead, I'm in that mantra of, like, what's next, right? Like, what's the next one, right? Like, and to me, it was probably going to be the U.S. Open or the U.S. Nationals, right? Because I wasn't stopping. Or it was going to be the next NCAA title that I was hopefully going to do win by even more. You know, that's where that originates from, not out of being an ornery. You could say that's orneriness, but there was just that drive. Like, that's just what was in me. It was like, as soon as it's done, I have to go work. I have to go earn something more. Win or lose, right? Lose, it's easy, right? It's easy to walk off the mat and go be motivated. But when you win, like, all right, I got to create something in my head to get better than where I was, because I can't settle. I can't stop. If I stop wherever I was just at, you don't stop. You go down, right? So I got to keep going, right? That was something, again, since I was a little pup, Roy Hall put in my head, you know, that this is how you operate. And that's where you get what looks like craziness.
If you're not climbing, you're sliding.
Yeah, you know, and it's, to me, it's simple. It's like, people are like, you don't, I'm like, well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. But so anyways, to go back to your question, was it a big deal? I think 08 was, because it was a moment, again, talk about my brother. I knew that was something he wanted to achieve. And I remember feeling like in that moment, like this would have been a big deal for my brother to see, right? And I knew that he was watching, but I mean, like, when I won, I remember having feelings like I would love to, like, see his face right now, you know, like, because this is what he couldn't achieve, and I know that this was his goal. I was going to do that already, you know? Not that it's that simple, but again, you talk about my mind, like, that was going to happen. You know, the thing that I wanted to happen was to go win a gold medal, right? Like, that's what I was chasing, you know?
And maybe that's the perfect transition point to talk about the last part of your competitive career.
Yeah.
And that was the international competition, the senior level competition. Yep. It was highly decorated, right? Pan American champion, a few other international titles in there as well.
Yeah.
U.S. Open champion, six-time world team
four
member.
Four-time.
Sorry about that. and many other titles that are incredible. However, what I've heard you say about that more than anything is basically that you didn't win the big stuff that you wanted to win.
Yeah.
The world titles,
mm-hmm.
the Olympic titles, the being on the Olympic team.
Yeah.
Looking back on that whole period, it was a long few years. Do you have any emotions about it that you could summarize?
About not achieving what I wanted to achieve?
Just about your whole senior career in general, if that's the main part of it.
To give you a quick summary, I guess the few things I've got to say about it is I did do a lot of really great things. Like, to sit here and pretend like it was a complete failure would be stupid, right? It was not a failure. Now, in reflection to what my expectation was and what I wanted, yeah, I was plenty short of where I wanted to be. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I did some really good things. I beat some really great wrestlers along the way. You know, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that I couldn't do the things I wanted to do. And by that I mean that, you know, I wrestled with and I beat the best guys in the world. I didn't beat them at the World Championships. I beat them at the Olympic Games, right? But I was there. You know, like, it was one of those things where it's like, I was there, and I didn't walk away thinking like, oh, I just wasn't good enough. You know, it was just like, you know what? Like, on those days, you know, six of them in particular, right? Because you got four worlds and two Olympic trials. On those days, for whatever reason, I was not the best version of me, or I wasn't the best in the world, period, right? So, from my coaching lens, I like to a lot of times go back through and try to evaluate and nitpick and be like, okay, not that I would have or could have changed things, but like I look at it from a point of view of like, hey, I want to make sure David Carr has his best opportunity, right? So what did I mess up, or what did I possibly mess up that I can make sure that we do right over here, right? Or try to, right? You know? So that would be my lens of it. Do I have regret? Absolutely not one. I could say that without a doubt. I've got no regret. I know that I put every ounce of my soul into training, into doing things the way that I thought was going to best put me in position to win. And on top of that, I did it while having a family, while getting married, while having a whole lot of other things. Again, when I look back, I'm like, whoa, there was a lot going on. And you still, do you have what I want? No, but still did a lot of really good things. A lot of really, really good things that I'm proud, like I'm proud of. I'm proud to say that I did those things, that I went and I wrestled in the Krasnoyarsk every single year. You know, you could even say, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Maybe you should have competed less. Yeah, maybe, but I also got to wrestle the best guys in the world every single year.
Brent, it's unbelievable talking to you just today, exactly how positive-minded you are. You wouldn't guess it. Yeah. You wouldn't guess that someone is intense and mean. You think mean is negative. Yeah. Emotions must be negative emotion. But as mean as you were on the mat, you're so positive. You're so freaking positive. This is the polar opposite of what you hear Tom and Terry, no disrespect against them. When they look back on their careers, they cry and they say, this and that didn't happen, especially Terry. Again, no disrespect, but I guess that will be disrespectful for him to hear. But that kills those guys to this day. They haven't gotten over it.
Yeah.
I mean, Terry especially hasn't gotten over his stuff, and they hate to lose. But you look back and you see the good in all of what you've done, and you love to win.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and I think it says something. There's a lot of stuff that I'll have to unpack later, but there's a lot of good messages and a lot of good notes in everything you're saying. Just to tap on a sad note, though, again, the most heartbreaking interview I've ever seen in my wrestling career, more just being a consumer of wrestling media, is you after the Olympic trials.
In 2016.
That had to be the toughest moment in your wrestling career, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know, there's been a lot of moments, but it was tough, but it was just facing the music is what was tough. And here's what I mean. When I lost because I got beat, but I lost for the same reason that I freaking lost a lot of wrestling matches, which is everything that, you know, I was talking to a coach about this the other day, right? Like, my mentality that served me so well also bit me in the ass so many times, right? The mentality of, like, don't settle. Don't win by one. Don't, like, always pursue. Always build. You know how many matches I won because of that? A lot. You know how many matches I won I probably had no business winning? Probably a lot. But you know what? There's a couple big ones I lost for the exact same mentality. And that example would have been there, and this isn't to take anything from Frank, but I remember being ahead and, like, 30 seconds to go, and, like, I would just challenge myself to say, you know what, if I had to block and do defense for 30 minutes or 30 seconds, I feel like I probably could have done it, right? But my mind, again, like, whether it be my asset or my chink, was I have to go get one more. I'm at 30 seconds. I got to go get one more. Go get one more takedown. Why? I don't know why I was thinking that. That's what I was thinking. And I just remember swinging because I was going to clunk him and get him to react.
And what then, match is this you're talking about specifically?
Frank, in the trials. The
Frank
one,
Molinaro,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, the one that mattered. Yeah, the one that I lost on the front side, right? Yeah. And sure enough, he posts eye crotch, takes me down. And right away I knew, I'm like, ugh. Like, why do you have to go get one more, you know? So that, to me, was hard because you're facing all these things where it's like instantly I knew. Instantly I knew. I'm like, dude, it bit me in the ass again, right? It's just a mindset thing, right? It's a good thing, but it got me there. And then I knew it was done. I knew I was done competing. So I don't know. I don't know. Again, there's so many things here, like, is it hard to face the music? Yeah, no, but I always just say, just like I've done in other interviews, like with the perspective of, you know, losing your brother early on in life, like nothing's hard. Like to tell me, hey, Brent, you're going to be a great wrestler, but you're not going to make the two Olympic teams you were probably favorited to be the Olympian member of. Can you handle that? But you get to keep your brother. Fucking, are you kidding me? Yeah, I'll sign that deal every freaking day, you know? So why am I positive? Why? I don't know. Maybe it's just a, you know, you add all that stuff together and you get what you get. But so I don't know.
And then I'm amazed by the freaking things you say, man. Your perspective on everything is, you must have put a lot of thought into this, or maybe you didn't, and again, it's just one of those things, you're wired that way. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. We're about to wrap this whole darn thing up, but I have a few rapid-fire questions I'm just curious about, but I also want to say, and now you're channeling all that energy of whatever sort into your coaching, it seems, because you want to make sure David Carr gets what you didn't get. Mm-hmm. You want to teach maybe, hey, maybe you're up a bunch of points in an important match, you got to know when to not shoot or when to not overemphasize your club.
Yeah.
Things like that. But it's just impressive that you're using your, what could have been pain for other people if they weren't so right-minded as you are, what could have gone and made them resentful, you're using for the absolute right ways.
Yeah.
I just respect that a lot. Yeah. That's really cool. And I know the guys here are probably just so thankful for it. And before I say thank you and wrap this whole darn thing up, few questions.
Yep. Let them rip, man.
Your family. We didn't even talk about your family much, and maybe you'll say a little something extra about them. Your wife, I assume she has her PhD now.
Mm-hmm.
She's a doctor in something. You have your kids. You were able to, thank God, turn to your kids after the Olympic trials even. You still have them here in Iowa. This isn't a rapid fire. How important are they to you?
My kids are everything to me, as they should be most parents, but I love it. They're getting older. I've got a 9, a 7, a 5, and then two all boys, and then it's going to be a 2-year-old daughter. So it's awesome to me to watch them grow, and they're getting to be that age where I'm starting, you know, they're getting their own personalities. They're really starting to grow up. So that's a ton of fun. You know, my wife and I thoroughly enjoy, you know, I think I would say that we all have our guess of like what our kids will turn out to be like. And it seems like every year that passes, they just keep surprising us. So, really important to me. Really try to, what's fun about in this environment, being working a part of university, is that they get to be a part of a lot of it. You know, even though I do have to travel quite a bit, whether it's for recruiting or whether just for my job, they still get to be a part of a lot of it. They get to be a part of the recruiting weekends that we have here on campus. I try to, you know, I don't bring the boys to practice a lot, but they're getting to be to that age where they're like, I don't need to have my hands on them. You know, I could bring them, I could sit them and say, hey, they don't want to come, they can sit and watch. You know, having them just be a part of it. It what's fun is they're getting to know the wrestlers. They're getting to have their favorite wrestlers. You know, I bring them over to the house and stuff like that. So just like the other day, I think my kids were doing something. And I was with David, and, you know, I called the phone. I'm like, hey, Wyatt, my youngest. What's up, buddy? He goes, hey, let me talk to David, you know, because he knew I was with him. So then he sat and talked to David for 5 minutes. So, you know, that is fun, you know, to know that they, outside of our family, they've got a giant family, which is cool, you know.
That is awesome. Yeah. I just had to ask about your family because I know you're a family man, but your wife, what'd you get a PhD in? These are the beginning of the rapid fire.
Yeah, no, she got her PhD in, I'm going to butcher this, but exercise science, kinesiology, in that realm. So she's done some teaching here and there, but she mostly just stays home with kids.
Where'd you meet her?
Met her at Iowa. I met her the first month I was on campus. So let's just call it August, September-ish. I arrived on campus for the first time ever. And then I met her mid-October, something like that. So just a couple months I was on campus. Met her through, she actually lived with Alex Sertus's girlfriend, who is now his wife, was living with my now wife at the time, ironically. So they were just together, and I met her that way.
Right on.
Yeah.
Favorite thing about her?
About my wife? Favorite thing about my wife is probably her, well, I think she's beautiful. I love her smile and her eyes, and I don't know, I like looking at her. That would be my favorite thing. But also, the way that she pushes me, the way that she holds me accountable, and she's damn loyal. I remember a couple particular instances, and I'm not going to tell the story exactly, but I remember just, like, having some things happen where I just remember thinking to myself, like, wow, like, this girl is loyal to me. She's got my back. Like, even when I'm wrong, she's going to let me know I'm wrong. But even when I was wrong, I felt like she was loyal to me and she wanted what's best for me, period. There was no, you know, and that,
that's awesome.
It was powerful to me, you know, where I was like, geez, like, even against my own will, like, you're looking out for me. You know, even if I'm not looking out for me in that certain circumstance, you know, which was something that I think when a couple of those things happened, I knew, I'm like, man, this is the girl for me, you know, so.
That's pretty special. Yeah. I didn't expect to get that type of answer.
Yeah.
Toughest guy you ever wrestled?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say Garzon. I always say Garzon, a Cuban. And I only wrestled him once in Cuba. And the only reason I say toughest is because I always joke, because we have some Cuban guys in our team now. I remember wrestling him. So I got beat by guys before, and, you know, like, you get beat pretty good or whatever. You know, I remember wrestling this guy and thinking, I don't stand a chance. Like, I remember, like, standing out in front of him, and then, like, he's, like, behind me. And, like, being like, how did you just get behind? And I just go to my belly, right? And then, all right, well, I don't know what happened there. Wrestle, boom, he's behind me. Like, we had a film. We had paid these little kids to video, you know. You pay them $100 to film. They literally, the start of the match goes like this. The whistle blows, and they go, and they film the mat. There's no film. And they kept the film running. And then when it was over, they picked it up. So there's no film of it. So I don't even know how to describe what he was doing. But it was the one time I wrestled him. I was so excited because, I don't know if you know the history of Garzon, but he was great, like, really good, but he always throws matches, which I don't even blame him for because they're so poor. Like, he would get to the corners.
Oh, Cuba, of course.
Cuban,
from
yes.
Cuba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he was great. He would, I remember my first Worlds in Moscow, it went, let me get this right, the Olympic gold, world silver in Garzon, and he beat them all. Got to the quarters or semis with the freaking Russian, stood there, did nothing through the match, and then the Russian makes the finals. So although it was interesting perspective for me, because you talk about, like, I never won the Worlds. Well, dude, it's a random draw, right? So the best two guys in the Worlds the last 2 years in that quarter bracket, they didn't place either. And not that it was a consolation prize or anything, but it was, like, perspective for me. I was like, all right, you just, like, the World Championships finds out who the best guy is. Doesn't find out who the second best guy is or the third or the fourth. It's the best guy, right? Because the second best guy in the world could have wrestled the best guy the very first round.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Like, it could be matched up that way. Either way, he was unbelievable. So I was so excited to wrestle him, and sure enough, he kicked my ass. Like, I remember walking away being like, I wasn't qualified for this match. Mm. Like, it was bad.
What about college, though? Who toughest college guy?
I mean, it's easy to say Caldwell, but not really, and it's not disrespectful. But our matches were just like highlight reels, which is exciting. But, like, I don't know. That means any given time it could go one way or the other. To me, the toughest guys to wrestle were like the Palmer type guys, you know, because it was just so hard to just get a takedown because they're just so defensive that just made it made it really hard because you knew every time you went in the match, you knew like, all right, like there's going to be a takedown. Like, when are you going to get the takedown, right? You got to keep him off. You got to get – because it's not going to – you know, he doesn't open himself up for big scoring. You know what I mean? Hmm. And that's not a ding against him. I'm just – to me, that was always the matches that I kind of dreaded were the ones where I knew it was going to be, like, a close match.
Right.
Compared to – like, I'd wrestle Darian all the time. You kidding me? We're gonna throw it out there? Yeah, let's do it, you know? Huh. I've got a pretty good feeling that I'll end up on top most of the time, but, you know, obviously not that one, but.
right. And you ever considered MMA?
No, I haven't considered MMA. I haven't been approached about MMA either, though. Probably a little too late in my life now. I would say I may have tried it. Like, let's just like put our like reverse our worlds like it doesn't exist. Where we are now with MMA, and I am who I am, and I get through in like 2012, 13, 14, something like that. If I get approached about that point in my career and someone legit is like, puts like a real contract in front of my face, was like, hey, here's a path to success in MMA. Do you want to try it? I probably would have. Maybe. I don't know. I could say that now. But it would have been, I don't know. Obviously, I was pursuing trying to be an Olympic champ, so I wasn't even concerned. But I'm not going to say I wouldn't. I've tried it, but I don't know. I can't punch, dude. Like, it's bad. Like, I don't know. It's bad. People swear. They're like, oh, you could learn. I'm like, listen, I'm not a fighter. I've never been in a real fight in my life, whether you believe it or not. I'm not a fighter, and I've been punched, like, twice, and both those times I went blacked out. So I got a feeling I have a little bit of a glass jaw, too. So
you've been punched and knocked out before?
Oh, yeah.
Who was it?
My
St.
brother.
John?
Oh, my brother.
Geez. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Laid me out. Just one, wasn't even, it was just in the wrestling room, but he just swung and I just black, you know, limp knees just boom, went
out. All the times you've been knocked out, it's been Chase?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And legit. Like, I remember waking up being like, what the hell? Crying. I cried a lot in the wrestling room, so that wouldn't be unique. Again, it mattered to me a lot, so I was emotional.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Oh, is there one more question?
Yeah, sorry.
No, I talk too much. No, you don't. You kidding me? They've been a fantastic guest so far. I don't think I have anything else. I probably did. I'll kick myself after this. Yeah. But Brent Metcalf, your life's a movie, man. What a story. Yeah. What a story. Yeah. You live, eat, and breathe excellence. You have an incredible mind in you as well. So positive. This is going to be a really great episode, and I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you letting me come to this beautiful facility you got here at Iowa State University. We're right by the football field, and let me come talk to you for nearly 2 hours now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You are the man. I've learned a lot, and
perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure.
All right. Yeah. Okay, and thank you everyone for watching and listening to that episode of The Paul Garcia Show. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and comment on this video. And until next week, God bless. I'm Paul Garcia. Thanks for watching.